KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Thank you. I'm very excited to have our guest here. I got to know him a little bit last year, and I'm excited about his personal story and sharing what he does here at Fresno State with our listeners. His name is Timothy Yeager, and he's the Executive Director of the Behavioral Science Institute here at Fresno State. One of his main jobs is working with the Autism Center at Fresno State. Thank you for joining us this morning, Tim.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Well, Tim has a fantastic story about how he came to do what he does here at Fresno State. And he is from Selma, born and raised in Selma, California. And you're the oldest of two boys. Your parents, Ben and Phyllis Yeager, they also from the Central Valley?
Yeah. So my mom was actually born in Indiana, moved here in seventh grade, and my dad's from Easton.
Oh, Easton. Yeah. So even he moved up to a bigger city then, huh?
He did. Moved on up.
So what did your dad do?
My dad has worked for Guardian Glass here in the Valley ever since he was 19 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's great to have those companies that you can start out with and just stay.
Make a career of.
Yes. Yeah. Wonderful. And you told me that when you were growing up, that church was a big part of your life and that helped you to develop a sense of your responsibility to your community. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, growing up, I was at church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, sometimes all weekend. And the biggest sense, you know, that church, you know, impacted me was the sense of community and that we're in it together. And that when a family's going through issues, that there's other people there that are helping support you. And I guess later in life, I missed that in a lot of ways and wanted to try to rebuild that sense of community. And my job here is really helping that.
Mm-hmm. Are your parents still in Selma?
Yeah, my parents still live in Selma. I live in a house that I grew up in. yeah. My mom for a long time was a business owner in Selma. Mm-hmm. She did alterations and home decor.
Oh, great.
She still does that now on the side.
Did she sew your clothes when you were growing up or things for the house while you guys were growing up?
She was always sewing something for us, hemming something. She still does that.
Uh-huh.
Fortunately, though, that allowed her to always be around, and she was home most of the time for us, and we always had mom around.
Oh, that's great. You also mentioned that sports played a big role in your life when you were growing up, from 5 to 18. So did they sign you up for Little League first, or T-ball?
I'm pretty sure I started T-ball at 4.
Wow.
And from that point, and, you know, we were talking, there wasn't a moment that I wasn't playing sports. We'd go right from football to basketball to baseball to summer leagues. Sports was a big part, you know, of my history, and I think it formed a lot of important qualities that I have, such as discipline and work ethic, and a lot of mentors in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, I look back, and being from Selma and the community that Selma is, I run into a lot of people that I grew up with, and I run into coaches at the local donut shop or, you know, at restaurants, at Sal's Mexican Restaurant.
Oh, yes.
And they still play a big part in my life. It's a different role, and we may talk about, you know, athletic achievements that occurred, but I've run into a couple coaches now from football who are proud of, you know, what I'm doing now, and they may follow me on Facebook and
reach out
to me if they have questions about, you know, family members with kids, and those relationships are still strong. They still call me Timmy.
That's great. Well, I think that a lot of times you mentioned having a lot of mentors in your life, and teachers and coaches and ministers are pretty much our earliest mentors, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's just a building block. It's learning discipline, like you said. It's learning to work with other people and to have a common goal. And those are all things that no matter what you eventually end up doing that benefit you if you, you know, learn them and you're respectful to each other.
And across all three of those professions, there are people there that are with you when you face adversity. And they're with you to push you through those times and not give up. And I don't know, I think the more we talk about my life, that semi resembles some things that I've faced and how I continue to push through.
That's great. So you are serious when you say that sports was such a big part of your life because you ended up being a high school basketball coach at Fowler Unified.
Yeah, coaching was was and is a passion. If I had the time now, I would love to still coach. I coached for a time at Selma's Middle School, Abraham Lincoln Middle School, coached seventh graders. And then I coached a JV team at Fowler Unified, and I assisted on the varsity team. It was a big passion. I loved doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you'll get a chance to do that with your daughter, Roslyn, as she gets involved. Does she play any sports?
She plays a lot of sports. I actually coached her soccer team this year. You know, I work with a lot of kids and I train a lot of staff, but coaching five-year-olds play soccer is probably one of the most stressful things I've ever done.
First off, it's look at the ball.
Yeah.
Right?
It's look at the ball, don't tackle your friends, stay in bounds, kick the ball while you're running.
Yes.
The butterflies are not that important.
Yeah. Well, you have an interesting way that you obtained your education. And I like that. I mean, you're an example of somebody who really, you didn't give up.
Yeah.
And I love that. Because you were the first in your family to graduate from a four-year university, you were just navigating the waters all by yourself. Tell us how you came to Fresno State.
Yeah, it was a 10-year journey to get my undergrad degree. Mm-hmm. I went to every community college in the Valley. I started out at COS.
Mm-hmm.
My goal was always to play baseball. And so I went to COS. They had a great baseball team, and my knees didn't really allow that to happen. I've had 9 knee surgeries on my left knee.
And
I was a catcher, I kind of kneaded my knees and yes. kind of wore them out. I played catcher ever since I was 7 or 8 years old, and so my body had a different plan. And you know, after baseball didn't work, I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I enlisted in the Army and was going to go for 4 years, and then I had another knee surgery, and the Army wouldn't then take me.
Oh.
And ended up walking on the tennis team at Reedley College and played men's tennis there while I was going to school on the side. And mm-hmm. Didn't really have a plan. Ended up at City College, Fresno City, and did really well. Decided I was going to become a math teacher. And that was in 2001. And got my prerequisites there. And then I went to Fresno State mm-hmm. for the first time. And just life went in a direction that I wasn't planning, and ended up dropping out of Fresno State and mm-hmm. working full time to support my family at the time. And eventually, you know, that took me to a lot of different types of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's all prepared me in different ways.
Yes.
But I didn't really feel like, when I get back to the sense of community, I didn't really feel like I was adding to my community. And I started to face a lot of just personal issues and just wasn't really happy in the direction my life was going.
But you were given a book
yeah.
in 2007 that made a big difference
yeah.
to you.
I was given this book by Viktor Frankl. He was a psychiatrist during the Holocaust. And the book's title was A Man's Search for Meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And the crux of the book is that it's meaning, not pleasure, that leads to a fulfilled life.
It's a great concept.
And it made a big difference mm-hmm. in my life. And at the time, I started to look at my life and reflect in different ways and to find out what my purpose was and what meaning was I adding to this life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, you know, I'm going to go back to school. And initially, my thought was to go back to school, become a school psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
I faced a lot of things as a child that I could have needed someone during mm-hmm. these events. And I felt the idea of being, you know, a voice to the voiceless as a school psychologist could really add to that purpose and meaning in my life.
And that would have been a fantastic goal. But you are doing that.
Yeah, I'm doing that in a much different way now.
You're definitely doing a form of that.
Uh-huh.
And so I went back to school at Fresno State, found a great college, the College of Science and Math, and the psychology mm-hmm. department were incredibly supportive. The faculty there are, across all the disciplines, are wonderful and really inspired me to continue to pursue this passion.
What were some ways that they were able to support you that made it work that time?
I had access to faculty.
Mm-hmm.
I had access to being part of research labs. I worked at the Central California Autism Center at the time as an undergraduate student. And I really started to see how what I was learning
mm-hmm.
could lead me to make an impact in my community. I worked at Clovis Unified as a teaching assistant in a special education classroom. And you know, every day that I would go into that classroom, I could see what I was learning in my behavioral classes and how that applied in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And this really gave a function and a purpose to what I was doing.
And tell us about your honor thesis that you did.
Yeah, I had a pleasure working with a lot of great faculty, and Dr. Marianne Jackson's one of them. She was my mentor as a psychology honor student.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at different peer tutoring strategies to use in a special education classroom. While doing that, I got to not only have an impact in working with kids, but training teachers on this process. And really seeing how research can happen that has an impact in an applied setting. Ended up being selected to represent Fresno State at a CSU research competition where we won.
First place.
Wow.
Nice. How do you like that for success? And then you were the Mary West Outstanding Reentry Student Award winner.
Yeah, that was a really proud moment for me and my parents.
I would think so.
Coming back, you know, as an older returning student, mm-hmm. I think I could add a lot just because of the experiences that I had and you know, what I had to go through in my life. But at times it's a little unsettling knowing that, like, I'm the same age as some of my faculty at the time.
Right.
And but to be honored in that way, it was pretty remarkable. If you look at the 10 years of undergraduate school, my GPA was not the best for the first six. But when I returned to the university and their support of the faculty, my GPA, you know, soared. And
I think it's a good example of how when a person finds the right fit, you applied yourself in a way that you had never done before. You had the support of people in a way that it didn't seem like you had it, that matched up with your passion, and you took off. And then you did it in such an outstanding way. So when the faculty started encouraging you to apply for a PhD program at Columbia University, yeah. Did you think that was something that was doable?
Never. Never in a million years. I'm a small town boy from Selma. New York City was never a plan for me, and an Ivy League university was something that I never thought that I'd able to be, you know, even thought, uh-huh. you know, to be accepted in. And they encouraged me. My faculty, you know, I applied to a master's program here. They continued to encourage me that, you know, just pick three graduate programs that you mm-hmm. want to apply to. And I said, I'll pick one. I'll pick the hardest one, and I will not get in. And I will you know, stay here in Fresno. I owned a home here uh-huh. in Fresno at the time. You know, my family was set and my life was here, and never thought I'd get in.
So tell us what happened when you did get in.
So I get an email and it says, you know, that I need to click on this link to log in. And I'm like, all right, well, obviously an email means I didn't get in. So
yeah, here comes the bad news.
Here comes the bad news. And I got accepted and I didn't believe it.
Did you just stare at the screen?
I stared at it. I think I emailed it to Dr. Jackson, and I'm like, can you just read
this wrong?
Yeah.
Did they send me the wrong
link? Yeah. And, you know, 2 weeks later, we had a Craigslist post, like, come in and buy everything in our house.
Oh,
sold the cars.
Oh, my goodness.
And within, you know, two months, I was in New York City.
Wow.
You're like, what just happened to me?
Yeah.
And how did the program that was there change your life?
Oh, immensely. You know, I'm somewhat embarrassed to say that I left Fresno State with the idea that I was going to study applied behavior analysis, but not work with children with autism. Mm. Those experiences that I had prior to it really shaped me just because I wasn't really qualified to work with the children that I was working with.
You didn't have all the skills you needed.
I didn't have the skills. Mm-hmm. And instead of accepting responsibility for that, I put it on them. Mm. And but what happened was I went to this program with the intent of working in Harlem at schools for children from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And that plan went in a different direction. And I ended up at a school for children with autism under the support of Dr. Greer and Columbia University, as well as Dr. Dudek and Dr. Jean Speckman, who supported and trained and challenged and encouraged me.
Mm-hmm.
They had a cohort model to where I started the program with 15 other graduate students, and they all became, you know, close friends. And we went through this really difficult program together.
Mm-hmm.
Back to that sense of community we had it. We would work full-time as teachers. We'd go to school from 5 to 9 at night to 3 nights a week. And for the 2 years, my life was... That's all it was. And mm-hmm. when people ask me how New York City was for those first 2 years, I couldn't tell you because it was Columbia.
Because you didn't
get
to go outside.
It was the classroom and it was homework.
But during that time, your attitude towards the people that you served changed because you were gaining these skills and starting to see a different impact that you were having on their lives?
Completely. The impact that, you know, we were able to have on the children that we served, and in turn, the impact that it has on the families of these children. And to know that you can make a measurable difference. The science that we study, applied behavior analysis, has a lot to do with data that we take and the environmental changes that we make. And when you can see measurable, objectively defined behaviors change as a result of what you're doing, it's impactful. And it puts you in contact with the real reasons why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to see lives change. I start to see 4-year-old boys talk for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think back to why I started going back to school, giving a voice to the voiceless. I found myself in a career that was actually teaching kids how to talk.
Yes. You were literally doing it.
Yeah, and how to give words to meet their needs and how to give them words to, request attention and request whatever it is they needed. And you hear a kid's word for the first time at 4 when a parent thought he would never talk.
Yes.
It brings chills to my skin right now.
You must have a lot of emotional moments there. So let's talk more about the Autism Center now. So you came back here in July of 14 with the position you have now as the executive director of the Behavioral Science Institute. Now, tell us about the Autism Center at Fresno State, who you serve, and how Fresno State students work in the center.
Yeah, so just real quick, the Behavioral Sciences Institute has 4 programs that all serve children with autism and their families.
Okay.
And I function as an administrative leader for all 4 of those programs.
Okay.
And through those 4 programs, we provide services from 18 months throughout the lifespan. The Autism Center provides services to children 18 months to 6 years of age. They are children from the community. They come to us through a variety of routes. The Central Valley Regional Center is a big partner of ours, and they refer kids for our services. We work with pediatricians who can refer kids to our services. And our kids, when they start here, it's an intense program. They are here anywhere from 20 to 35 hours a week to start. And we work on language. We work on social skills. We work on reducing any type of problematic behavior that might exist while training parents to work with their kids. Because like the saying, it takes a village. It takes a family and a village to work with these children and really make an impact on their lives.
And if a family has never experienced this before, we'll talk a little bit more about the rates in the Central Valley in a moment. But I think that eventually, if a person is not affected by autism now, they will be at some time, either through a relative, a grandchild, or, it's increasing and increasing. And I think our awareness is increasing. And I'm happy about that. And I know you are too.
I am.
And this month is Autism Awareness Month, and you've had a lot of different projects going on to raise awareness. Maybe if you could give us a definition of autism just to begin with, and then we can talk a little bit more about it. But once you give that definition, people might say, oh, wow, I didn't realize that I could be on the spectrum, or I could have someone else I know that's not been identified technically and that could benefit from learning more about it.
Yeah. So autism—it's called autism spectrum disorder.
Okay.
The word spectrum is appropriate because not every child with autism is the same, and it doesn't, present itself the same across kids. And so it generally shows a child with autism shows deficits across 3 domains: communication, social skills, as well as type of repetitive or maladaptive behaviors. So kids with language delays—they don't meet their developmental milestones. Children with social skills, where they may seem not interested in other people in their world, and that they behave in a way that secludes themselves, or they don't respond to attention or interactions of other kids or adults. They have been described as like acting deaf, where they won't, a child won't orient to sounds or orient to people's faces. And with respect to repetitive or maladaptive behaviors, children with autism are often have certain types of behaviors that they repeat. So they may rock back and forth. They may flap their hands. They may spin in a circle. They may do something that keeps them engaged in the environment because there's nothing else in that world that they are really interested in. And so the maladaptive behaviors, it can look a lot of different ways. But children who may not transition well may have issues with touching certain things or eating certain things, or are assaultive, aggressive, non-compliant in some way. And so at the Autism Center, we look at those 3 domains and we try to, as early as we can, and that's why identifying autism is so important early on, because the earlier we can work with these kids, our goal is by 5 to 6 years old, a successful program will lead to them living a quality life, going into a general kindergarten class or an integrated kindergarten class, and where those deficits that were there, at 18 months aren't there. So we develop a program to address those areas. We employ 40 undergraduate students and 15 graduate students to work with these kids. And we really provide a training environment. Our undergraduate and graduate students are our number one priority, in the sense that we know that if we train staff well, they will have an impact on these kids. And
in meeting those students, it's great to see how enthusiastic they are and really engaged with the children. And I think that that enthusiasm plays a big part in the success, because even if a child is not able to communicate that, they can feel it. Mm-hmm. I believe they can feel when someone is being positive to them and believes in them.
Completely agree. Like, we work on creating a positive environment.
Mm-hmm.
Even if a kid's nonverbal and doesn't, you know, have the language to understand the words you say,
mm-hmm.
how you say things matter to kids.
Definitely.
One of our first interventions when I go into any classroom and we work with any parents is we got to flip the types of attention these kids get from being disapproving and correcting mm-hmm. to approving.
Yes.
We want our staff delivering anywhere from 4 to 7 positive statements a minute to our kids.
Wow, I need to go hang out over there. That sounds great, Anjali.
Let's go. And so our staff, you know, it's a mutually beneficial relationship in that way, because we become positive, the kids respond mm-hmm. to that positive environment, and then we get to see the feedback from them, and that enthusiasm that we see in our employees is really a function of the lives that we change and mm-hmm. that we see that we're having.
Well, my guess is that the families and the children probably receive a lot of negative attitudes or responses when, especially if they're out in the public. The misunderstanding is that that's just a kid who's misbehaving. Yeah. They're not listening to their parents. They're not doing, or they're, if there's a meltdown, oh, they're throwing a fit, you know. And then it isolates the family, because then you don't feel comfortable going to a restaurant doing anything like
Absolutely.
That. Yeah. It's hard to find babysitters or people who understand how to interact with your child. And then you can't trust somebody.
Yeah.
So how do you support parents in their role and help them to get the confidence they need?
Yeah, that's a great question. The parents of our clients do a lot. They mm-hmm. are exhausted.
Yes.
They pour their lives into their kids, fighting for the services for their kids, mm-hmm. doing whatever they can. And the last thing they need is to go out into our community and be judged. And they often are.
Yes.
Your statements are true. And I would even add to the fact that they often feel like people are saying that they're a bad parent as a result
right.
of what's being seen. And so, one, we address that through community awareness. And that's one of our big missions, is having the community be aware of what autism is and
mm-hmm.
how to support people. But two is, at the Autism Center, we're changing our approach in some way, is where we in the past have only been a center-based program. We are now, with all of our new clients coming in, working on programs in the home as well as in the community
mm-hmm.
to try to address working on those types of skills for our kids.
Great.
You know, families would just love to be able to go to a restaurant
mm-hmm.
and sit down and eat.
Right. Things that you take for granted yeah. if you don't deal with those issues.
You have a 4-year-old?
Yes.
I have a 5-year-old. It's tough with
right.
our kids. And, it's, you know, and that doesn't even compare to uh-huh. what the families that we serve face. And so
right.
We're working on developing programs to support our parents. That's one way. The other way is we have another program in the Behavioral Sciences Institute, is Behavior Intervention Services.
Mm.
That program provides services to children throughout the lifespan, to elderly clients, working on behaviors that are in the community that support parents and support caregivers. And then we also have a positive parenting class where we teach parents on positive practices to work with children with autism.
Is that part of the Valley Children's Partnership that you're going to be starting?
The Valley Children's Partnership is going to be a direct partnership with the Autism Center, and we're mm-hmm. really excited about that. Valley Children's, you know, well-respected organization that's been here 60 years, providing great services to families.
Mm-hmm.
They're providing a space in their therapy center. We're going to be providing early intervention services to children with autism there.
Great.
It's fantastic.
It's one of our hopes to expand our services to reach more kids in rural communities, which lines up with the vision of Valley Children's as well. And families in the metro area need services for autism, but our rural communities are desperate for those services. And here at Fresno State, we want to see how we can be, you know, a provider and a resource to getting those services out to where kids need them.
And you mentioned the rural need. Tell us about the recent research that's been done that shows we're in a kind of a pocket here in the Valley.
Yeah. Rates of autism are starting to skyrocket. So it went from 1 in 150 in 2000 to 1 in 68 currently. And that's and that's 1 out of every 44 boys are diagnosed with autism. And the Central Valley has been identified as an autism cluster.
Cluster, okay.
Which means that our rates are even significantly higher than those national rates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's impacting our community. And that impact is seen not just in early intervention services or schools, but throughout the community. you know, individuals with autism are just like any other individuals. And
right.
awareness and training and job training and teacher preparation is needed. And those rates are going to have impact on our community for years to come. Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other events that you're doing during Autism Awareness Month? I know that you just did something at Home Depot. Tell us about that. And you said it might be ongoing.
Yeah. So we partnered with Home Depot. They had an Autism Awareness Day and we were out at three different Home Depots providing awareness training as well as working with kids doing projects. And Home Depot has expressed the idea that we want to work together. And so we're hoping to get Home Depot out to the center and working on a monthly building project with each of our
That'd
clients.
Be wonderful.
We also have a 5K and carnival coming up on April 25th. Mm-hmm. The 5K is going to be through campus. They're going to run around the Autism Center. And it's going to start and end at our carnival.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
To register for the 5K, you go to active.com and you can register. But the carnival is going to be from 10 to 2. It's going to be a family-friendly event with bounce houses, game booths, dunk tanks, food trucks.
Perfect.
Live music.
And I'm guessing Ryan Steiner's going to be there.
Ryan,
he did that big run for us last year.
Ryan's been a good supporter of the Autism Center and brought
amazing.
A lot of awareness to the services we provide. He'll be running the 5K. He'll be kicking off the 5K. And we're really happy to have him there.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us this morning. And thank you for all that you do for families and children that are affected with autism in our community. And for all you do for Fresno State.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Executive Director of the Behavioral Science Institute at Fresno State, Tim Yeager. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning. And please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Lady's Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.